Right.
Beautiful, huh? Good line. So, where's it? Tuesday. Could maybe contemplate stability as a way of thinking about meditation. Quite often we hear about attainments, or we can't even have attainments, and then we try to repeat them and manufacture them, and get rather frustrated because we can't reach them, or we haven't got what we think we should get. But if you take something that you can do right now, something quite ordinary, and keep working with that, then it's workable. It's not something you're trying to get in the future, it's something you're training with now. So ideas I find helpful, like balance and stability, are things I can contemplate right now, and hence I can contemplate imbalance. It's an imbalanced life. So in terms of balance, again, present moment, being in the present moment. So imbalance would be when my mind is thinking a lot about the future, about the past. And I think all of us find it's extraordinarily interesting how little time is spent in the present. It's embarrassing, actually. So then we see, okay, that's an imbalance. And why do we have to address that? Well, we need to plan. We need to consider the past in terms of the present, so on. But if the past-future thinking is driven by unwholesome patterns, such as anxiety or fantasizing or regret or resentment, then that dwelling in the past and the future is exacerbating suffering. So the imbalance is also indicative of unhealthiness, really, isn't it? In some way, and suffering in our own minds. So having seen that, and most of us, I think, have seen that pretty clearly, then we make a determination to somehow find the balance into the present moment. So one needs that kind of analysis to make a clear intention. And karma, the word kamma in Pali, is intention or volition, volitional action. So if I make an intention, I'm going to try to train by being present, then that's something I can train in. It's not something I have to attain to. I'll certainly maybe feel frustrated when I say, oh, there it goes again, off again, and that. But now I'm just training. That's imbalance. What's balance? So that is the kind of primary step that we need to take. That's the foundation, present moment awareness. Then the, like, bringing into consciousness what it feels like to be in a state of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-confusion. Because the problem in Buddhism is greed, hatred, and delusion, right? So what does it feel like when there's non-greed, non-hatred, non-confusion? Well, you have to be present, and there has to be an openness of acceptance, so there isn't aversion. And there isn't a grasping to try to get some particular experience. And we can come to that. It's not so extraordinarily complicated. And so I've been suggesting, as a way of considering that kind of balance and stability of just listening, you might get greedy and think, well, I'm listening for balance. But then there's, you know, the mind trying to find something called balance and listen to something. But just, it's very, the language I like to use is receptive awareness, open awareness, and then nowhere to go, nothing to do, that kind of language. So one has to create one's own language for coming to a sense of stability and balance, whatever language you like. You might use imagery. Again, some people really like images of space, so they, you know, they like to really open the mind, in the mind's eye, as it were, to the space of the Ottawa River. Some people, someone in Ottawa had a nice one. They imagined a flower blooming, which I think that was it. And that just really made their mind very peaceful. But whatever way it is, can you find a way of coming to balance? And do you understand what balance might mean in a sense? And then having a sensitivity to that, what that might mean, how can you sustain that? So the suggestion is to take a breath and just sustain a mind of non-greed, non-hatred, non-confusion for one out-breath. And if in that one out-breath you try to, you know, if you're too forceful and you have body awareness, your eyes will tighten, your mouth, your jaw will tighten. But if you don't have enough attention, then your mind will go off into somewhere else. Right? And so then if you look at it like just training in one, just really simple one out breath, rather than I have to watch my breath for an hour, which is impossible for most of us, I have to get something like that, then you seem quite defeated. But it's just that really simple balance for one out breath, then you start to have the power of balance and the power of stability. So then you need to choose an object of meditation which you feel simpatico with, not the telephone line, sorry. you feel at ease with, that you relate to in a kind of easy way. So it might be, you might enjoy the metta bhavana, or you might like visualization, you like body sweeping. Some people like choiceless awareness, and that's what we'll do this morning, or you don't choose an object, I'll talk about that. But I find if I understand the principles that I'm working with, then I can apply all kinds of techniques, but the principles remain the same. If you understand the principles, the guy that was top of my engineering class, Gord Homer, I remember him well. Gord, I wonder where he is now. A millionaire. Anyway, but he always worked things from first principles. He didn't pump out formulas, and he always got really good marks because he knew the fundamental principles, and he worked out a solution from those, rather than just kind of plugging in formula. And in the same way, it's like our training the mind, training the heart. It's like if one understands the principles of cause and effect, and why we're doing this. Right, then we keep putting in the causes from intelligence, from wisdom, from right effort, from right intention, and then we start to see the results of that. If, however, we just have a preconceived a notion that I have to do something and I have to get rid of this and I'm not good enough and all of that, then we just go at it in an idealized way. We just try to force ourselves to be a certain way. So always in Buddhist practice, right understanding is very important. We really understand why we're doing and how we're doing it. And why do we need stability? Why do we need that? Well, in itself, it's quite neat, isn't it, to actually be here for some longer period of time. Because then you do appreciate the bird life or the texture of the bark of a tree and so on. But it's not just an aesthetic thing. It does bring us to aesthetic beauty, but it's not just that, because when the mind has stability or samasamati or right centeredness or right concentration, as we say, then that stability can be applied to the primary question of the religious life: is who's doing all this anyway, and who's in the control tower? And you can only enter into that question. You can't enter into that question intellectually because you just think a lot and get confused. So you can only enter into that question in silence and stillness. And then you have to take that stability and focus on the very sense of someone focusing. Awareness on awareness. And that you get to the highest teachings of Buddhism, teachings on emptiness and anatta. But if you try that right away without morality, without a good lifestyle, without a responsible lifestyle, and you just take that endpoint, you can get some pretty bizarre things going on in so-called Buddhist cultures. So you get in one culture the warriors were taught that, well, it's all empty. So there's no one gets killed, and there's no one killing, which is pretty sick, really. And that's what one culture taught its people, its warriors. And that came from a a misappropriation of a small Buddhist principle, of a profound Buddhist principle, but misappropriated in a kind of devious way. And these were the priests, the Buddhist priests who were teaching this kind of thing. So those teachings on, you know, the highest teachings weren't given to everyone. They were given to in the whole system. The first thing was social responsibility. That was laid out first. That was always laid out first. Morality, generosity, being responsible in life. And then what was taught was stabilizing the mind. Stabilizing the mind, which in itself is beautiful. You know, it has its own rewards. And then when all that's in place and there's a strong sense of a social self, you know, a kind of good, solid self-respect because one is living a good life. And there's an open heart and generosity. It's not just a kind of selfish acquisition of some kind of mind state. So the whole idea, the kind of bodhisattva ideals that I'm doing this for all beings. And then the stability, the training of the mind, all that's in place. And then there's that kind of really refined investigation. So that's it's important to understand why we talk about sama samadhi or right stability or right concentration. It's often translated sama samadhi in the Noble Eightfold Path as right concentration, but that's a word which sometimes we misappropriate, and we just get kind of our eyebrows get furrowed and we try to concentrate. So just throwing around different language to try to see what this might mean. So try that balance, stability, because that's something you can see right now, can't you? You can see when the mind is at ease and relaxed, and how do I sustain that? And if you think about like how imbalance then, instability takes place, how does that take place? So having established some stability, you'll find maybe you'll start to maybe get anxious about the future. Now that kind of instability will be in thought, and it'll create stress in the body. So if you have stability, as instability begins to take place, you say, oh yeah, okay, and you go back to stability. Don't try to get rid of it, but you train around the instability. If the future, you're having some incredibly exciting project which you're going to get involved in, then the mind will take you there. So there'll be the stability, and then and you'll feel that. Kind of going off, and yeah, back to the stability. So you realize that instability is patterned in consciousness, and it comes up in patterns, and it will come up because that's the momentum, the force of karma, that will come up. And then you say, oh, yeah, okay, that's that kind of instability. You can train in that. If it's kind of really like a mind that gets annoyed at things, like. And you're just starting to get annoyed or averse to the bodily pain. Okay, there's that instability. Or a mind that goes into doubt. There's that, you know, just, what am I supposed to be doing? Well, that's instability. Back to stability. That goes in thought. So the grosser the instability, the grosser the effort usually. So let's say when we began the retreat, a lot of people were very, very sleepy. And that's just the nature of living busy lives. And then you can't be too refined. Really, you have to keep your eyes open. You have to keep trying to sit up, you know, doing kind of really ordinary things just to not hit your head on the floor. So you're picking your body up. And that's kind of a gross effort you need to make. But then as that sleepiness begins to fall away, you know, then you can be more subtle. And then the sleepiness is maybe just kind of a little dullness. And you don't have to put so much effort into your body, because it's more refined, the instability. So when you look at the way meditation techniques are presented, quite often they go from the coarse to the subtle. So if you've read about breathing techniques, they might start with just really deep breathing, just really kind of some really deep pranayama and getting into the body and clearing out the breath channels and energizing the whole system. You can't do that for 10 days. You could. I've never done a pranayama retreat. We should try it. But anyway, in this context, you know, that would be a good thing to do. Like if your mind is kind of really busy and all over the shop, then do something quite extreme like that. A lot of really deep breathing and settle the mind into that. Then in the usual techniques, then you see things like counting. So then maybe people will introduce counting. So they'll count one at the end of each out-breath. And they'll do it to 10. And if they lose the count, they'll start from the beginning again. Get a little incentive there. and then you drop that. And then maybe introduce the word Bhutto. In Thailand, they'll do that. Bhutto, Bhutto. Just one phrase to keep the thinking mind active with just two phrases. And then we'll drop that. So until finally the breath object will become just one point. So it'll be the whole breath, and then one part of the breath will become interesting. It might be at the nostrils, it might be at the belly, and then the attention will be just there in a very natural way. And the mind will stay there with that. And then from that you'll get things like nimittas and all the refinements of the jhana practices. But if it wasn't the breath, it could be something else. The thing about the kind of coarse things of like the coarse defilements that we have, like a really, really hyper busy mind or a lot of dullness or restlessness, very obvious things with the body, with the breath, are very helpful because it's right there. It's right there for you. And you just have to muck about, basically. It's a kind of hit and miss affair, higgledy piggledy, find your way sort of eightfold path. and because teachers just offer from their own experience, and their own experience isn't your experience, and kind of lay out some general ideas. But again, if one has a sense of the general principles of establishing stability and training the mind. So having said all that, sometimes there is really no need to meditate, especially if there's a lot of very difficult material coming up. You know, sometimes there is maybe just a backlog of stress comes up into the mind. Then you just have to somehow kind of let it through the body and through the mind without picking it up. And there again, body meditation is excellent. So if I've experienced a deep loss, maybe last month, and I've been really, really busy, and then I come into the retreat, and then finally I can stop, then as we all know, that loss has a chance to manifest in terms of grief or sorrow or regret or remorse in all kinds of ways. And then you don't want to get rid of that, and yet you don't want to get lost in it. You want to process it, don't you? You want to process it. And then if one just realizes, well, that's the natural result of that much stress, then okay, then that's going to be what I have to just be patient with. So there's this ability, okay, let it come up, be patient with it, don't go to the storylines. So things like, for any of you who suffered from burnout, and a lot of us have, you know, the results of burnout, it's just kind of really wacky emotions, depressed thoughts, crying at the drop of a hat, suicidal thoughts, you know, it all comes up when people are really stressed out. And there what you need is usually if the whole psyche has become so stressed, then you need a lot of faith, I guess, huh? Because usually your object of meditation has just gone out to tomorrow somewhere. You know, just nothing you can do. And there you need just faith and trust, a lot of encouragement from friends to say it's okay to let these emotions come through you. And that's a sign. It's a sign where our system has just been really stressed out. Just as if our muscles are stressed out in some way, when we stop, the muscles are going to feel it. They're going to pulsate and going to feel pain in them, just the same with the heart and the mind. It's going to feel the same things. So there are kind of degrees of a purification, say, that are going to take place according to what has happened to us in the past. And it is a kind of movement to refinement with intelligence and wisdom, and that we have to see for ourselves. So just to sort of like, if I'm having a lot of difficult material come up, just to think, oh, there's something wrong with my practice. No, it's just the conditioned nature of mind at this time. So the practice would be acceptance and peaceful coexistence with that. And if one cannot take the thoughts too seriously, they'll be there, but not believe them too much then and go back to the body, then it will process itself. It takes a lot of faith and encouragement that way. So in terms of this choiceless awareness, this is something that many meditators come to because they don't really want to focus on an object. They like to kind of leave the mind just open. So what that practice is to come to a sense of receptive awareness, and the stability there is basically to stay in the moment and allow change to take place without reacting to change. Right? That's the stability. So the stability is not so much an object. The object isn't what you hold on to, it's the present moment. So when I take an object, I need present moment and I need the object, right? So I take present moment, hold that, take the object, hold that, and keep the mind stable. Choiceless awareness is just present moment, allowing the flow of things to come and go. So the mind will notice things, it will pick on things, but the general attitude is receptivity, welcoming, allowing, and that's a bit more nebulous. It's a bit more nebulous, but many people find that they prefer that. They prefer a kind of really open practice to a more focused practice. And of course, we all kind of do variants on both. So what I thought I could do for this session is maybe just do the full Monty. How's that? do some body sweeping, some metta practice, yeah, and focus on the breath, and then kind of just let go, right? So maybe stretch your knees and sit a bit.